I'm Mark Strassman. This is the booksite.net. We're about to talk to Jen Banbury, author of Like a Hole in the Head, which has just come out in paperback. Welcome, Jen, to the booksite.net.
Thank you.
What can you tell us that you're willing to tell us about your personal pre-publication life that might shed some light on the characters and events in Like a Hole in the Head?
Well, before I wrote Like a Hole in the Head, I was working on another novel while I was living in Los Angeles, and I decided while I was about halfway through rewriting it that I really hated it. I thought it was lousy. And at the time, I was working in a small, odd little used bookstore, and I had started reading a lot of Los Angeles fiction to try and get a better handle on Los Angeles. I thought Los Angeles was a very confusing place.
You're not a Los Angeles native?
No. I'm from the East Coast. I'm one of the great Western migration of post-collegiate, uncertain young people. And I started reading LA fiction, a lot of noir, and I just really became interested in the idea of trying to create a really great hard-boiled protagonist that was a woman instead of a man. And at the same time, I was working all these very bizarre jobs, some vaguely in the film industry and some not, like at this small used bookstore, and they gave me fodder for the book. In fact, the used bookstore where I used to work, it doesn't exist anymore. That's kind of the model for the one that that is in the book.
So there's sort of a combination of the noir fictional world and the actual world that you were living in, or both sort of come together like a hole in the head.
Yeah, that's true. There's very little that's autobiographical, but certainly there are moments that reflect the way I felt or was feeling about Los Angeles and the strangeness of the place. For instance, the character of the writer-director, it's a character who is sort of unable to think for himself, and every time he makes a statement or asks a question, he sort of verifies it through his assistant because he doesn't really trust his own memory or opinion, and that's a character that I felt like I'd come across personally in a lot of different forms while living out here.
In thinking about the noir record as well as female detectives, there aren't that many. I'm not intimately familiar with either genre, but the female detectives that I know about aren't in Los Angeles, and the people who Raymond Chandler and such who write noir for L.A. don't. There are plenty of women in them, but they're not the protagonist. Did you have to do anything in particular to sort of create this new character within the existing genre?
Not really. She was inspired by these LA writers, and you're right, there are very few female protagonists that take place in Los Angeles. She was also, it was kind of a combination of that noir, hard-boiled detective character, and also a little bit of the lovable sociopath characters that you find in, like, Charles Williford and Jim Thompson, and even some other books that stray a little bit further afield, like Camus' The Stranger, and Patricia Highsmith wrote, she wrote great lovable sociopath characters, but she always wrote them as men, not as women, and so all of that led me to believe that there was, you know, a real opportunity to kind of explore that idea.
Okay, well, let's analyze Jill, who's the protagonist we've been talking about, a little bit more. Is she a feminist?
Is she a post-feminist?
I think she probably doesn't care. I mean, she's a feminist in the sense that it's very important for her to take care of her own problems without help, without outside help. I mean, she is absolutely against the idea of being saved by the knight on the white horse. You know, she won't even tell friends what's going on in this whole situation because she believes it's her problem and she's going to deal with it. And she's very, very tough. But she has a streak of vulnerability that I think marks her as more of a female than those other protagonists. I don't think it'd be fair to consider her a feminist, but I think she just doesn't think about it.
Okay. Without calling them explicitly losers, a lot of the men that she deals with in this book are jerks, twerps, creeps, or some combination thereof. Are you trying to say anything here about the men in Los Angeles?
Don't all those add up to the word loser?
They do.
Well, part of that was, again, in keeping with kind of the noir tradition, I wanted the men to be more of the femme fatale or loyal secretary types, which means that they're a little bit ditzy in the way that women have often been portrayed in noir books in the past. And they're a little bit of losers. That wasn't supposed to be anything specifically directed at men in Los Angeles. I know some great men in Los Angeles.
It seems then essentially what you're doing is a more or less explicit gender role reversal of the traditional noir novel.
Yeah, I certainly had that strongly in mind when I was writing it, with a bunch of other elements thrown in as well. But that was what specifically sort of got Jill up and running in my mind.
Good. Everyone can find out more about Jill by getting a copy of Like a Hole in the Head by Jen Banbury. Thanks very much for talking to us on thebooksite.net.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Mark Strassman. This is thebooksite.net. Our guest today is Jen Banbury, who's the author of Like a Hole in the Head, which has just come out in paperback. Welcome, Jen, to thebooksite.net.
Thanks.
The heroine of, or the protagonist of Like a Hole in the Head is Jill. It seemed to me, in following her around L.A. in the book, that she seems to lie every time she's talked to, even when she doesn't have to. Is that a fair assessment of her veracity?
She lies an awful lot, and that's kind of it's sort of a distancing device for her, and I think it's also a way for her to feel in control of her situation. She's going through a very tough time, and I think, you know, she feels as though the way to keep people at bay and to just kind of to keep the world at bay is to just lie about pretty much everything.
If they don't know where I am or who I am or what I am, then they can't get me, I guess, is what she seems to be thinking.
Exactly. And she doesn't want to feel vulnerable to anyone either. And so that's kind of the way that I think she's able to feel that she's stronger than she actually is.
Okay. So it's a coping mechanism.
Exactly.
Who would you like to see play Jill in the movie version, other than Gwyneth Paltrow?
Well, the film rights or the film option was purchased by Fox Searchlight, and they actually bought it for Calista Flockhart. It's an interesting choice. I think it's hard for me to imagine anyone playing her besides who's in my own head. So it's more just, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what anyone might do with it, and I know she on screen would be a different character than she is on the page, but that's pretty much always the case.
The violence in Like a Hole in the Head seems to escalate steadily throughout the book, and it gets it sort of starts off as kind of, you know, not exactly playful, but more theoretical, and of course it's all theoretical, it's fiction, but it escalates. What's going on there?
Well, I wanted it to get to a point where she is actually in danger. It starts out just, as you said, almost on an unreal, slightly playful level, and gets a little scarier and scarier as it goes on. And that, for me, is also a little bit symbolic of Los Angeles, that there's kind of a lot of stuff on the surface which is weird but harmless, and yet there's this undercurrent of kind of genuinely awful stuff that exists.
In fact, there's an entire universe of fictionalized movie violence and another world of real street violence, and the relationship between the two of them is a problematic and shifting one, it seems. Do you have any thoughts about the current debate about the relationship between literary or filmic violence and real violence?
Well, there's no question that the violence in the book has a certain cartoonish element. There's actually a scene towards the end of the book that's supposed to be sort of a parody of a moment that takes place in the Quentin Tarantino movie Reservoir Dogs, in which these two characters have Jill, the protagonist, and are kind of torturing her. And they're having arguments over which kind of music they should play and what's appropriate and what's not. And that was kind of my comment on how the soundtrack in Reservoir Dogs in that torture scene is really sort of awful and I think inappropriate, because it's such great music, it almost makes you excited about that scene. So this was kind of shining a light on that.
Not to be confused with Beethoven being played at in A Clockwork Orange and ruining Alex's enjoyment of that music.
Yeah, no, it's a problematic issue.
What other authors would you consider to be your progenitors or role models or people who you've looked to for inspiration or information?
I'm sort of a voracious reader, and I love a huge variety of books. I read a lot of Antarctic exploration, as the character Jill does. But I would say for this book specifically, Charles Williford and Jim Thompson, who are both really good pulp writers, were very influential. Charles Bukowski, a Los Angeles writer who I like a lot, and actually Walker Percy, Walker Percy's book, The Moviegoer, had a really big impact on me for this book. And as I mentioned, also The Stranger by Camus, Patricia Highsmith. Those are all people whose work I really love and respect a lot.
And what's the next project you're working on?
The next project is a book also set in Los Angeles. It's not a sequel, but it sort of addresses similar issues, and it's in the same genre, but it's not a sequel.
Okay. Well, there's plenty in Like a Hole in the Head that doesn't require a sequel, so I want to thank you for talking to us on thebooksite.net.
Thank you very much for having me.